So we were discussing Kayagata Sati Sutta. Actually, we were discussing this for a long time now, and we come to the last section today. And so far, we have covered several topics. So Kayagata Sati Sutta, as we discussed, it is available in Majjhima Nikaya and deals with the benefits and the various techniques in the mindfulness on body. So it starts with the mindfulness on breathing, and we discuss how one can develop mindfulness using the breathing. So we are trying to keep our attention at nostril and allowing breathing to happen naturally. And as it happens, we are keeping our attention again and again on the incoming breath and again the outgoing breath, and it subsequently sort of improves our attention, improves our mindfulness and concentration, because breathing is a very natural calming process, neutral process, and therefore it doesn't have any defilements attached, and again it calms down the mind, and it's a very simple process. So basically our mind doesn't like these kind of simple processes, rather it likes to deal with very complicated processes. But mindfulness, as a rule of thumb, always takes very simple processes so that mind become fairly clear. If any technique is complicated, then that doesn't really suits for my as a mindfulness technique, because mindfulness techniques are always extremely simple, extremely fundamental. But anyway, this simplicity does not mean that we can easily do it, because our mind operates in a different way. So if it is difficult or if it is complicated, if it is confusing, our minds are like to ponder on it. But on the other hand, these simple techniques doesn't require any sort of thinking, pondering, rather kind of it promotes direct knowledge, it promotes direct experience. So say for example in Anapanasati, so breathing is a continuous process, happens from our birth time. And we are now trying to keep our attention on each and every breath. As it happens, we can recognize that our attention grows, our awareness grows, and our attention comes to our body. And that is one of the important benefits in this practice. So Kayagata Sati Sutta repeatedly emphasize that benefit, that once attention being drawn inside the body rather than it's going outside, rather than being distracted, our attention is again and again fairly restrained towards the body. Typically, our minds are tends to go outside thinking about the past and the future, imagining and thinking about someone else, going here and there. So this is the typical untrained nature of the mind. But on the other hand, when the mind is well trained, Buddha says, so it basically abandons various, say, mundane way of thinking, proliferation, rumination, and likes to stay within in a very comfortable, very calm, quiet manner. So that is one of the benefit. And then we get on to another technique, that is the four postures. As human beings, we know sitting, lying down, standing, and walking are the main four postures we typically associate. And each and every posture we can use to establish mindfulness. While walking, we can be mindful. While lying down, we can be mindful. While standing, one can be mindful. And again, while sitting, one can be mindful. So once we start like this, so we can refine our mindfulness. It does not mean that we are always staying at the same place. As we improve mindfulness, there are certain other qualities come and join with mindfulness. Say for example, as you keep your attention within the sitting posture, then at the beginning only maybe you can have a kind of an anchoring to the mind. But later, as your mindfulness improves, you can recognize various processes, subtle processes happening within the body, happening inside the body. And you can even carefully observe them. Say, for example, rising and falling of the abdomen is such process. So you can keep your attention very carefully to each and every rising and falling and observe what is really going on. If there are any other various sensations, you can keep your attention there and you can observe. So this actually improves clear comprehension, sampajanya, and that is actually operates as a seed for wisdom. So more and more we do this observation, then it is contributing towards the wisdom. So then Buddha mentions about the clear comprehension, there are how we can sort of widen our mindfulness. So even though we start with maybe four postures or in-breath and out-breath, later we can introduce mindfulness to various daily activities. That way we are spreading mindfulness throughout the whole day. From the very moment that we get up until till we go to sleep, we can use various activities to improve mindfulness. So one has to have kind of a eagerness, kind of a desire to improve this mindfulness. How I can improve mindfulness using this particular activity? Am I really mindful while engaging, talking with another person, while listening to someone? So am I really being mindful or am I going sort of unmindful? So this is something that we can investigate. We always have to look back ourselves, look back our mind and recognize whether at any given moment, is it the mind in proliferation? Is it the mind in autopilot mode? Or is it really mind is living in the present moment, really embracing the present moment, really being mindful? This is something we can reflect. And then we discussed about bodily parts, because now the Buddha is taking ourselves to a different view, where rather than thinking this body as a compact one thing, now he is encouraging us to look at it as bodily parts. So you know, if we consider a vehicle, it consists of various parts. Once we assemble it in a particular style, in a particular model, then we call it a van, we call it a car, we call it a jeep, likewise. So various components are there. Once we assemble it, we give various names. Similarly, body also has many bodily parts, and once they are assembled, we call it a man, we call it a woman, we call him a child. So likewise, there are many names we are giving. And if it comes to a, say, outside world, we call it a dog, we call it a, say, bear, whatever it is. So likewise, these bodily parts, once assembled, once put them together, we give various names. So this is another way of looking at the body. So the compactness view, that is one of the deluded view we have, will be penetrated. And then that view is further refined using the elements. So rather than looking at this body as bodily parts, now Buddha asks us to recognize various element characteristics. According to the Buddha's teaching, the whole physical world can be explained in four different elements: earth element, water element, fire element and air element. So these elements can be recognized by their characteristics, how they are behaving. Say for example, while walking, you can recognize how earth element presents. You can recognize how air element present simply by recognizing those characteristics. Earth element has its own characteristics, air element has its own characteristics, and using them we can recognize the manifestation of these elements. And then we got on to another topic. Those are the nine channel ground contemplation, what is going to happen after the death. This body, even though it appear, say, beautiful right now, even though it appears somewhat, pleasant right now, once it passes away, it becomes really loathsome. It goes through various stages of decaying, and one can sort of reflect this decaying corpse, and as a result, one can compare the corpse and one's own body. So that one's grasping reduced, if one has a lot of conceit, that's going to be reduced. And if one has a lot of lust, that also going to be reduced. because this is something common to all human beings, all beings, and we are basically ignoring these. We simply live in a superficial world where we simply hide these realities. But Buddha invites us to see this reality so that what is really going to happen after the death, how, what are the stages, decaying stages this body would go through at the end. So this is another way that one can recognize one's own body. And then we discuss about absorptions. First jhana, second jhana, third jhana and fourth jhana. So they are the material jhana, rupavachara jhana, and we discuss about those jhana. And first jhana Buddha encourages in a way, telling that it has certain qualities. It has the applied mind, where again and again it is being applied to a selected object, selected sort of a very refined wholesome object, and again it is being sustained there. And once it is properly sustained there, and when the mind has no any other distractions, so the mind become naturally happy, naturally sort of delighted, because so far mind was in a scattered, confused, and under the suppression, under the influence of defilements. But now all the defilements are subsided, and mind is in a very pleasant abiding. So as a result, certain qualities are there in the first jhana. As one moves to the second jhana, one recognizes certain drawbacks, disadvantages in the first jhana, and as a result, one discards certain jhana factors, certain qualities available in the first jhana, and attains more refined second jhana. Second jhana, compared to the first jhana, more stable, and the concentration is fairly high, and the happiness is very refined. And then one can move towards the third jhana, so that is even refined, and has a more mature type of happiness. The second jhana is sort of dealing with rough sort of happiness, what we call as piti, rupture. But when it comes to the third jhana, it has become more mature and more refined sort of happiness. More mature form of happiness is available. Kind of a contentment is available when it comes to the third jhana. And even that would be let go of when, in order to reach the fourth jhana. Fourth jhana basically has equanimity. Fair, strong concentration is present, and very pure mind is present, and again equanimity is present. So these are the certain qualities available in the fourth jhana, and again on top of that, the mindfulness is extremely refined. So these qualities are there in the fourth jhana. So after explaining these things in this sutta, Buddha discusses about how it is progressing. So one may start with very basic rising and passing away, or simply with postures, or in-breath and out-breath. But later, it is sort of enhancing in very wide scope, and as a result, many benefits are available in this Kayagata Sati, mindfulness on body. And Buddha explains those progress and various benefits, giving many different similes. So today we can discuss that a little. And Buddha says, if one wants to build any certain good qualities, and Kayagata Sati, mindfulness on body, becomes kind of a basis for that. In order to develop any other enhanced quality, enhanced skill, first of all, one has to establish mindfulness on the body. So mindfulness on body appear like a basis, appear like a, say, fundamental stage in order to develop further. So it's very much like Buddha giving a sort of a simile. If one view the ocean, so ocean is something has many collection of waters coming from many different rivers. When one thinks about the ocean, when one pay attention to the ocean, so one is actually paying attention to everything. So similarly, Buddha says, if one is paying attention to kayagata sati, so that is a sort of a pool of resources available, which can be later harnessed to any other, whatever the skill to be developed. So, and again, Buddha says in another similes, telling that if one develops mindfulness on body, one has fairly firm stability of one's mind. On the other hand, if one doesn't have such developed mindfulness using the body, then easily mind get distracted and Mara, the evil one, can catch him. So kind of a comparison we can do here. The first column shows the simile is given when mindfulness is less or mindfulness is not developed. On the other side, when mindfulness is developed. So Buddha is giving various similes. Say for example, if one throw a ball to a wall, then it simply does not stay there. It may bumps, it may reverse back. But on the other hand, if one throw a stone towards a very wet clay wall, then that stone simply gets stuck there. So similarly, Buddha says, if one's mind is not developed well with using the kayagata sati, so the Mara can easily find occasion to sort of defile his mind. Mara can easily catch him or make him kind of a victim to his own hands. But on the other hand, when the mind is well developed using kayagata sati, Buddha says, so Mara cannot find such an opportunity. Another simile is given. So if there is matchstick, or today's terms, if there's a matchstick or lighter, we can easily ignite a fire, kindle fire, when there are some dry straws or dry sticks are available. But on the other hand, if we consider some wet wood, then we can't build a fire. We can't make a fire. Similarly, Buddha says, suppose when one's mind is not well developed using kayagata sati, it can easily get angry. It can easily get lustful. So such ignition can happen easily because the mind is not well developed using kayagata sati. But on the other hand, if one has well developed mind using kayagata sati, Buddha says it cannot be subjected to those kind of evil thoughts, because fairly firm purity is available which has drawn through kayagata sati. And then another simile is given. If one wants to put some water, if the jug is completely filled, then you can't put more water. It is because already filled to the brim. But on the other hand, if the cup is empty, the jug is empty, one can easily fill water. So similarly, Buddha says, if one's mind is filled with mindfulness, or fully it's developed with mindfulness, the Mara can't find an opportunity to put his evil thoughts. On the other hand, if mind is not developed, if the mind is basically not skillful, then those defiled thoughts find opportunity to pollute the mind. So these are the similes given. And then another part actually deals with certain direct knowledge, is what you call as abhinya, where kayagata sati and especially the four jhanas what we discussed later can be developed to the direct knowledges. And therefore Buddha says, like when water is full in a jug, you can easily pour it to any side, then the water will simply flow out. Suppose if there is a pond filling with water, kind of filled with water, if one breaks the what you call this embankment, so then the water starts to spill out. So similarly, Buddha says, if there is a good vehicle, Now here it is giving like a horse cart, whatever is a vehicle is available, and if it is, if one is really a good driver, one can easily take that vehicle and travel to any direction. Similarly, Buddha says if one's mind is well developed using Kayagata Sati, one can take this to any direction. If one wants to develop Vipassana, one can develop that. If one wants to further develop Samatha concentration, that is also possible. Say to Arupa Vachara Jhana, that is also possible. Or to Abhinya, that is also possible. So likewise, many different broader view is given at the end of this sutta. And on top of that, there are another 10 benefits are mentioned in the sutta, basically telling that if one further develops this mindfulness on body, makes it like a vehicle, one's own vehicle, like one's own property, again and again developed, repeatedly developed, so then there are 10 benefits are also possible. So these 10 benefits, very much like one can easily remove the discontent in the mind. Say one easily get sort of unsatisfied with one's sort of practice, or one sometimes get some discouraged about the practice. So these discouragements, unsatisfactoriness, can be easily removed if one has developed fair amount of mindfulness on the body. So that is the first benefit. And then Buddha mentioned one can easily overcome fear and dread. And if, because one has kind of a comfort within oneself, and one has developed a fair amount of confidence while being alone, and therefore you don't need someone else's security. And basically the mindfulness itself appears like a security, like a safe place. So therefore, even in certain other suttas, say for example in Aryavasa Sutta, Buddha mentions the nobles only consider mindfulness as one's own protection. That's all. There is no any other, he doesn't sought any other protection, because he considers mindfulness as the sole protection, as the only protection. Similarly, here Buddha says, if mindfulness on body is developed, so one can easily remove any sort of fear. And in the third benefit, Buddha mentioned, when mindfulness on the body is developed, one can have a lot of perseverance. One can endure any pain. One can endure even hunger, thirst, mosquito bites, say any snake bites, maybe if someone blames you, any of those kind of very sort of sharp hindrances or sharp, say, obstacles you can go through, can penetrate, can bear, if one develops mindfulness on body. And then it comes to the fourth benefit, and actually that we already discussed, where if one develops mindfulness on the body, then that can further enhance towards the jhana. First, second, third and fourth jhana can be developed when one has developed mindfulness on body. And then number fifth, Buddha says one can lead this awareness, this mindfulness, further to attain certain superpower, a sort of abhinya. And then number six, those are also actually super, sort of what you call as supernormal powers, where divine ear, divine reading others' minds, understanding others' minds. Say when one has a lustful mind, one can understand he has a lustful mind. When one become angry, one can easily understand this person is now angry. When one's mind is going through some loving kindness, one can understand, okay, this person is now going through loving kindness. So likewise, some understanding about another person is easily possible if one develops mindfulness on the body. So this is very much like kind of an observation on oneself. So when one for a long time observe one's own mind, and especially here one's own body, so one can recognize various sensations as well as various bodily changes, as when the mind is going through various states, various wholesome or unwholesome states, And inferentially, one can recognize what is really happening towards another person. So one can inferentially understand how, what are the sort of mindset available within another person. So that is the to some extent what we can understand here. But on the other hand, so if one develops abhinya, then maybe another story where using those kind of spiritual powers, one can read another one's mind. And here number 8, one can recollect one's past lives. And number 9, the divine eye, one can see how others are sort of arising and how others are passing away. That means how one is getting birth, depending on their sort of karma. So those are another skills. And last, number 10, is where one develops one's mind to the purification. Where one can purify one's mind, recognizing each and every defilements. And basically that is the enhancement of Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, where one starts to purify one's mind. So that actually we can discuss later. And so that ends this sutta. Fairly towards the end, there are sort of huge benefits are mentioned. A huge list of benefits are mentioned. And those are not easy benefits. They are extremely useful benefits and extremely powerful benefits are mentioned in this sutta. So that basically ends the Kayagata Sati Sutta. I think we have discussed this sutta maybe about 9 weeks or 10 weeks. And today we can wind up totally this Kayagata Sati Sutta. Now I open the session for question and answers. Questions and related to today's sermon, or if you have any other thing to discuss, so I open the session.
Sir Ivante, there are these 7 questions.
Fine.
Question number 1, walking mindfulness. Dear Ivante, I have been practicing walking mindfulness as per the instructions during the last few months. My initial experiences were very similar to the other participant discussions in this forum, and the question and answer was very encouraging and valuable for me. As explained by other reports, I feel the gross sensations at the beginning of the practice on the soles of my foot and somewhat fade away after 10 to 15 minutes. During this time, distractions or getting carried away by thoughts happen as well, especially when the mind settles. But I have learned over the period to cope with it and to gently bring back the attention to the walking process. Recently, I started realizing that the gross sensations are not so detailed and strong as earlier. They seem to be a bit blurred and fade away from the onset. I feel the touch of the sole on the ground and the impact of the pressure, but nothing in detail. All the sensations seem not precise. Can this happen from the beginning at the start of the session Monday? I understand fading away as a transformation of here and now sensations. Can this happen at the beginning? Appreciate Bhante's clarification. That's the end.
Yeah, actually it can happen because at the beginning, as you start your practice, it may take long time so that it may not happen in the beginning because you need to settle your mind. You need to focus your attention. But then as you move forward, so this focusing may not take long time, and you know the technique, you know the skill, you have the skill. So therefore easily your mind gets concentrated, and as a result these sensations appear very vividly from the beginning. So suppose only you may spend a couple of minutes to focus your attention, afterwards sensations are available. So you can vividly see them, you can clearly see them. So therefore it is not impossible, it is possible. Yeah, back to you, Chatur.
Question number 2 of 8. General question. Dear Venerable Sir, during reflection reporting sessions at the retreats, especially the ones conducted by the Sarvamanya Monastery, we hear about the structured way of presenting meditation experiences. There are very specific areas that the practitioner should be focused on, cutting off any unnecessary information and logical arguments. For a beginner, is there a clear benefit of presenting these experiences in a simple and crisp manner, which will lead to effective contemplation in the future? Appreciate Bhante's clarification on the method we should adopt in this type of forum if we are presenting the meditation experience related to walking and sitting practice. With metta, that's the end.
Basically, I mean, you can start with very basic techniques. Actually, we should not go for any complicated procedures. But now, say for example, people are already depressed and people are already sort of bombarded with so much of information. So therefore, I mean, if one can connect with the nature, if you can go to a garden and if you simply come out of your, I mean. And not to someone else's place, but rather, say, if you have a little garden at least, so you can sort of be there and have a little walk and connect with the, say, trees, birds, sky and all these things. And slowly you can then start to develop mindfulness. Because if we cut off ourselves from the nature, that is one of the mistakes that we do. But on the other hand, if we open up ourselves, if we connect with the nature, and that is where we can again be well grounded. We find our lost connection. And basically, then you can start with yourself. Say, how I can be mindful while walking. How I can be mindful while sitting. And so very certain techniques like breathing, rising and falling. So these are very easy techniques where one starts to feel oneself. One's own body can be felt. So basically, our attention does not stay within, it's always more outside. It's always searching for information, searching various news, and those news are very distracting, really discouraging, and leads to a lot of depression. So if one can stop looking at those discouraging, depressing news and come back to oneself, and look at one's own body. What is really going on inside? I recently got a little a picture where it is telling you can't go outside, so try to go inside. So this is very simple encouragement where one is now trying to explore one's inside. What is really happening in one's body and again what is going on in one's mind. So basically one can start with the body. So it's a kind of a beautiful investigation. So that's what we were discussing many months now. How long or how carefully and how skillfully one can use this very body to develop mindfulness. To overcome various states in the mind. Say for example, if your mind is depressed or if you are getting tensed or if you are angry. So if mindfulness is not yet developed enough, you can't handle it simply by looking at it. But on the other hand, one has another technique. So that is to look at the mind. That is to look at the body. So what are the changes happen inside the body? Say for example, you are now angry. So how the body has changed? Previously, your muscles are not tensed. But when you are angry, certain muscles are really tensed. Your face becomes somewhat, changed of color. And you may be breathing somewhat in a gross manner, maybe fast. So likewise, certain bodily changes are possible and they are available. And you can observe these bodily changes as instead of looking at immediately the mind. So these very basic techniques you can start, and maybe little exercise, maybe little yoga exercises, maybe a walk. So these are basically helping us to come back to ourselves, to connect with the body. So it's kind of a grounding experience. So we are now become earthbound. We become living on the earth. So we become really having found our home. This is coming back home. being with our home, being at our home. So rather than sort of thinking that COVID is there, I can't go out, and every day people are dying and all these things. So I mean, this is not the only time that the history has gone through these kind of epidemics. There are many things have happened, and that is the nature of this human world. So that is why Buddha is telling, I mean, this is not the real home for us. So we need to find a real home. So this is, if we think that we have a car and we have a, say, occupation and say wife, children, whatever it is, and if we think that is the end of the world or that is the best, so then we are mistaken. So, I mean, there is no certainty, there is no permanency in any of these sensual world, sensualities. But if one is able to come back to oneself and understand what is really going on inside, so that's a kind of a worthy sort of an exploration, worthy sort of an investigation, because we as human beings, we are really spiritual. And this is, in a way, kind of a blessing in disguise, where one can start to look at oneself. It's a kind of a eye-opening to all of us. So even though we may have money or any other comforts, luxuries, but still they can't give us happiness. They are very temporary. They are very, in a way, very, say, transient. And we can't depend on them. But on the other hand, if one has one's own maturity, one's own, say, spiritual development, so that may be another alternative one can take a look. Yeah, we can go to the next section.
Question 3 of 9. This one is a general question. Dear Bhante, last week you explained that clear comprehension develops out of continuation of mindfulness across multiple movements and activities. During day-to-day activities, such as brushing teeth, was highlighted as the example, where the practice will be further advanced when being mindful on activities across various stages of the process. This can be directly applied to the walking practice as well. In this light, how can clear comprehension be developed in sitting practice when you are doing breathing mindfulness, since there are no activity junctions or posture junctions to be mindful on? Thank you for your guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, good question. So these posture junctions, activity junctions are in a way very rough. So you have very clear junctions available there. But on the other hand, when it comes to the breathing, so those subtle sensations or subtle information available within the breath appear like the junctions. Say, for example, at the beginning, you only recognize, say, in-breath and out-breath. So that's all. You don't know any other detail. But on the other hand, when mindfulness refines, then only you can recognize, okay, in-breath and out-breath are very different. Maybe in-breath long, maybe out-breath short, maybe in-breath cool, out-breath warm, maybe in-breath happens in one nostril, out-breath happens in another nostril. So likewise, these are certain differences you can recognize only when clear comprehension is improved. Otherwise, we simply do a kind of a surface scanning. We simply do it in a superficial manner without going deeper, without really sort of investigating the breath. More we investigate the breath, more these subtle details are going to be available. And later Buddha says, not only in-breath and out-breath are different, but even consecutive in-breaths are different. Even consecutive out-breaths are different. They are not 100% similar. So then it's a kind of a challenge. We thought that all in-breaths appear similar, all out-breaths appear similar. But now there's a challenge to see these differences. So when compared to the previous in-breath, what is the difference between the current breath, current in-breath? When compared to the previous out-breath, what are the differences available in the present, current out-breath? Now you are further investigating. So this, in a way, improves clear comprehension, and it is paving the way to develop wisdom. Clear comprehension, as I said, is the seed of wisdom. And Not only that, then Buddha asks us to see the beginning, the middle, the end of in-breath. And there may be a gap just before the beginning of out-breath. And then the beginning, middle, end of the out-breath. And there may be a gap just before the next in-breath. So likewise, these subtle details are available only when clear comprehension is improved. So this is how clear comprehension takes into the picture when it comes to Anapanasati. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 10, sitting mindfulness. Dear Bhante, I have been practicing mindfulness sitting for the past 8 or so months. In the early days of my practice, I could feel my breath at my nostrils, which made my practice easier. And after a few months, I was able to watch my breath calm down, followed by bodily feelings such as arising of breathing, as you explained. Since of late, I find it difficult to feel my breath at the nostrils, which is making it hard for me to establish mindfulness when I sit down. Please guide me as to what the best way of watching my breath is when I don't feel it much at all. Much merits for your guidance. That's the end.
Actually, here you have mistaken. Basically, it is not a must to breathe feel the breath throughout. At the beginning you may feel it, and this feeling may improve. But later, it becomes very subtle and very refined, and you may not feel it. So that's a progress of mindfulness. That's a development of mindfulness. So you don't need to get discouraged. Instead, try to keep your attention simply closer to the nostril, and that may further refine mindfulness, and later even it is possible to appear the breath. Because once your mindfulness is further refined, that refined mindfulness may be capable of recognizing the very subtle breath. On the other hand, if you can remember Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha explained the fourth stage, that is the Passambhayam kaya sankhara asa sissami iti sikkhati, where when your breath calms down, when your breath refines, you have to facilitate it. You should not breathe in a gross manner, you should not change your posture. Rather, you have to allow the breath to settle. Not only the breath, the whole body has to be settled. The whole mind has to be calmed down. And the feast is going to happen in the future. Basically, the happy part is available in the future. Now you are blocking it by making it gross. So rather than doing that, simply allow the mind to calm down, allow the breath to calm down, even to disappear. Nothing to worry. So when breath disappears, just be quiet. You don't need to worry about what am I going to do, what is the next moment, what is going to do, and all these things. That is actually doubt. Now you are encouraging doubt, vichikicca. Without encouraging doubt, if you can simply be quiet, say breath completely calm down, mind also have settled, there are no thoughts in the mind, and just be. We don't need to do anything. Just be. And this actually gives a different dimension to your mind. And we always think that we always need something to reflect. We always the mind needs something, like a chewing gum. But it is not. You can simply be without anything. So mind has its own capacity to be with itself. So therefore, when breathing calms down, when you can't recognize any breathing, don't worry. Simply keep your attention closer to the nostril and just wait. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 10. Sitting mindfulness. During mindful sitting, I prominently felt the heat on my face. I did not have a fan and it was very hot in my house. I have heard, to write a reflection, you need to add the amount of time you are mindful. For example, you could write, I was mindful for 2 breaths. How do you express the amount of time you are mindful when you are focusing on something like temperature? That's the end of the question.
Could you repeat it, Chatu? Temperature?
Yeah, so it's the last part is, how do you express the amount of time you are mindful when you're focusing on something like temperature?
Yeah, basically you don't need to know about the time. So all these time and space coordinates are lost. I mean, you don't need. So we are giving a lot of labels, we are giving a lot of names, concepts to our experience. So that is what we are trying to reduce. So the mindfulness practice, especially the vipassana, is helping us to simplify our whole experience. So we don't need so much of labels, we don't need so much of other parameters, but rather we have a very simple, very refined, well-focused attention. So at that time, you don't know what the time is. You don't know where you are. And even you don't know where this sensation happens. So that is a good thing. So don't worry about it. I mean, that is why we are basically discussing to clear these doubts. So when your mindfulness is refining, we are coming to the very refined, very, say, primordial or very fundamental kind of experience. But day-to-day, untrained mind typically lives in a conceptual world, dealing with politics and dealing with, say, the whole world, COVID and all nonsense. But here, once the mindfulness is well defined, well developed, and your concentration is well developed, so we are basically losing those unnecessary information, and the mind is fairly calm, very quiet, and it has very basics. It knows that the body is simply living, and you don't know the time, and you don't know the space where you are, and some sensation is available. And that is then only a very best level of Vedananupassana or best level of Kayanupassana going to happen. So therefore, what has happened is a kind of an improvement in your practice, and you don't need to worry about it, and you don't need to worry about the time. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 10. Sitting mindfulness. Dear Pandit, during the guided sitting practice today, I came across rising and falling observations for the first time. All this time my mindfulness object was breathing. Since the rising and falling was then, I kept observing the nature of these observations. I could observe the tightness and the way expansion and contraction occurs during rising and falling. Separately when rising and falling, and could feel the differences. After 5 to 6 minutes, these sensations started becoming subtle, and rising and falling came down to a small vibration. At this stage, I started feeling the very subtle breath, and my observations shifted from the vibration to the subtle breathing sensation. After 2 to 3 minutes on the nearly vanished subtle breath, my observations shifted to the body, mainly the sitting posture. I could feel the posture, but in a very blurred and bleached manner. I could feel the warmth of palms resting on my thighs, but I could not distinguish left and right hands. I could feel the pressure on parts of my back and some stiffness somewhere. In summary, my experience today within 30 minutes was a vivid transformation, one starting from rising and falling, switching to subtle breath, and then to some knowings on the body. I don't have a specific question, but thought of writing the experience for Bandhu's feedback.
Yeah,
lots
good.
Of merits,
yeah.
For your valuable guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, actually, we can connect this experience with the previous question. Basically, that's what we discuss. When we are starting our practice, there is someone, okay, I am breathing, I am going to meditate, so I am so and so, I am living in Australia, I am living in Sri Lanka, so I am in this town, I am in this city, all the COVID problems are there, so all many things are there in our mind. So that is how we start. But as our mindfulness refines, so all that distractive thoughts may disappear. And you are now coming back to the body. And now only the bodily sensations are available. And then you don't know the time, you don't know the place. And now you are further refining, and you don't know even the place of the body. So certain sensations are available, and you don't know exactly where it is. But something is there, some sensation is there. So this is how it is developing actually. So then only you can see the reality of this sensation. What is really happening to this sensation? How it appears? How long is it lasting? And how quickly is it disappearing? So now you are investigating, and only that investigative mind and that very refined experience is only possible, only available. And you are simply dealing with that. That's all. So the whole experience has simplified, and you are doing a very minute level investigation. So that is the proper vipassana, where your mind has discarded all labels, all concepts, and now you have come back to the direct experience. That's all. So therefore, if you experience it, it's a good thing. And at that time, your posture appears blurred. You can't recognize kind of a boundary. If you try to put your attention to the body to find out the posture, you can't find it. You can't find out a really clear-cut posture. It has become blurred. It has become sort of merged with the environment. I mean, you can't find a kind of a real cut, I mean, clear-cut boundary to the posture. So that is not a bad thing. So only thing is, you have something, some primary experience is available. In sometimes we call it as a paramatta, where which is free from all these labels, free from all these concepts. What we have is the simple direct experience. So this simple direct experience is the object of mindfulness, object of vipassana. Which has to be free from all the labels, free from all these concepts, that man-made concepts. And then we can connect with this very primordial level of experience, and that is what we are trying to observe, what is really going on there. And the mind is very clear, mind is free from any thoughts, no inner chatter, and on such an environment, insights are possible. Insights, the sort of openings, sort of understanding, wisdom, going to appear only in this environment. Right.
Question number 7 of 10. General question. Dear Bhante, during the guided session today, Bhante pointed to observing the nature of the observations, how they arise, how they linger, and how they go away without highlighting a specific object or feeling. Is this technique related to Dhammanupassana, or contemplation of Dhamma or phenomena?
It can be considered a part of Dhammanupassana, because Dhammanupassana is a kind of a broader aspect where the bodily phenomena also can be observed, feelings can be observed, perceptions can be observed, various mental constructs can be observed. So it can be considered like that. On the other hand, you can consider it as Kayanupassana as well, because you are looking at the body and you are looking at the various outside physical experiences. And so you can still say it is Kayanupassana, because in Kayanupassana we are dealing with the Rupakkhanda, the materiality aggregate. Therefore, we can say it as Kayanupassana as well.
Question number 8 of 11. Dear question. Dear Venerable Sir, can we please have the notes that you discussed today? Much merits.
Sorry?
They just wanted the notes from today's...
Ah, yes, yes. Sure. I will upload it just after the session.
Question number 9 of 11. Mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Bhante, I have been unable to practice meditation for the past 2 weeks due to other priorities. My father has been unwell, so I'm helping to support him and my family. In these circumstances, how should one practice Buddhism? For example, should we mindfully help someone who is sick, learn about nature of the body and impermanence with metta? That's the end.
Sure, definitely. We discuss even in the clear comprehension section. I mean, it is not simply the sitting is the meditation or the walking is the meditation. Slowly, we should be able to spread mindfulness to other activities. So we have to learn how to deal with others, how to walk with others, how to talk with others, and to recognize their feelings. And that is where we call the empathy, to feel someone else's say feelings, to really connect with another person. And then you can really connect with another person, you can really communicate with another person, you can sympathize to another person, you can be compassionate to another person. So this is also part of mindfulness. And you can really connect with another indicates that you are now a sensitive person. You are not a kind of a selfish, not considering others, but rather you can connect with another person, you can be comfortable with another person, and you know how to communicate with another person. So this is part of the practice. So therefore, you can include this experience to looking after your mother, looking after your father, and again, while doing that, you can observe your own mind. Are there any kind of resistance coming in? Are there any kind of anger coming in? Or are there any kind of too much emotions coming in? Or are there any kind of excess compassion coming in? So we can deal, actually. Say, for example, we can talk about the negative impacts. Say, for example, the patient is doing something that you don't like. Then you can get angry. So you can recognize this anger. And once you recognize, you can remove it and again come back to the middle. Kind of a balanced, equanimous mind. On the other hand, suppose your compassion is too much. So your kind of overwhelming compassion comes. So that is also not necessary. So there you should recognize there's a kind of overwhelming compassion comes. So you become too much emotional. Then you can't do the proper thing. You can't really do the treatment to the other person. So at such occasion, after recognizing that too much confession or too much emotions, you can slowly allow them to fade away. And again, you can neutralize yourself. You can come to the middle. So this being in the middle is the most comfortable region that we can deal with any situation. Without being too much emotional, without being too much, impulsive. So that is where sort of a comfortable, mature state of mind is possible. So these are in a way kind of a learning experience while dealing with others. So therefore you don't need to ignore this experience, rather you can deal with it.
Question number 10 of 11. Bhante, we're going to go over time. Is that okay?
Fine.
Okay. Mindfulness in day-to-day activities. Dear Bhante, thank you very much for these valuable sessions. I am a doctor and currently doing virtual clinics by telephoning patients during COVID. It can be very stressful and takes a longer time than when I see the patient in clinic. Any advice that you have for me to be mindful and calm and increase my efficiency will be much appreciated. That's the end.
Actually, as doctors, you all are doing a great job these days, because now the whole population depends on your hands. So basically, take it as an opportunity to help the whole humanity, because people are helpless. Many are going through a lot of depressive situations, and economically they become really affected, and again the sort of the situation is also become worse. So likewise, the whole humanity is going through a real bad situation, and in a way these are the possibilities available for us to look at alternatives. There is another sutta called Upanishad Sutta, where Buddha says, so this real suffering helps us to look at other opportunities, helps us to look at another sort of strength within ourselves. But if these kind of challenges are not available, then we simply sort of satisfied with the mundane level of achievements. But on the other hand, when these kind of problems are coming on our way, then if we get encouraged, if we sort of become strong, then we can overcome them. Then we can actually face the situation. Actually, we have this courage But that has to be sort of ignited, that has to be aroused, then only actually we can become sort of a mature, say, kind of a what you call the resilience is possible, and all sort of kind of some rare qualities are possible, and they only happen when these, say, obstacles are coming on our way. The whole spiritual life is helping us to overcome these, I mean, to deal with these situations. Now, say for example, even if you are meditation, and if you are really practicing, you may understand that it is not always going up. There are many downs as well. Sometimes it is happening well, and some days it is almost kind of a collapse. I mean, it's almost like a defeat, because there may be many, say, disturbances, and your mind does not concentrate. You can't come to the level that you were in another previous day. So it's like a loss. And this is also part of the practice. How you can deal with this rise and fall. How you can deal with these ups and downs. So this is where Buddha says how to have an unshaken mind. Don't think that meditation or mindfulness is a kind of a rose bed. It's a kind of a real encountering of the life. So you know atalodhama, the ups and downs of the life, vicissitudes of life. So this is common to everyone, even to the Buddha. I mean, we as human beings, what about the story then? And even to the Buddha, these ups and downs in the life is possible, life is available. And even the arahants, these ups and downs are available. And so we as human beings, if we are properly facing them, then we can really nurture our mind. We can really strengthen our mind. So these challenges are the real sort of tests coming on our way, are the real exercises coming on our way to develop ourselves. So therefore, take it in that angle, then actually we have the strength to deal with it. So don't get discouraged. Always take it positive. Always think that you can do it, you can bear it. And I can add another statement by Venerable Achan Cha. And he says, of all the qualities we develop in our lives, patient endurance is the most important. And you might think the mindfulness is important, or concentration is important, jhana important, whatever it is. But Achan Cha says, of all the qualities we develop in our lives, patient endurance is the most important. And Buddha says, Tanti paramam tapotitikha. So we all as human beings, so we have to be very patient with the ongoing situation, and slowly, definitely this will also pass. I mean, this is not something permanent. So in the future, this COVID or whatever it is may go away and we can recover. So don't worry, and simply face with the situation with courage.
Question number 11. This is the last one. It has two parts, both on sitting mindfulness. First part, does the analysis of breath come automatically with sampajanya, or does one have to try and think of differences of each breath and the start, middle, and end? That's the end of the question.
So actually that encouragement has to come from our side. And if you simply do kind of a surface scanning or superficial observation, then clear comprehension may not develop. So that's why the encouragement is there in the suttas, where Buddha expects us to see these differences. So what are the differences between in-breath and out-breath? Whether is it happen in one nostril or another nostril, whether it is cool, hot, etc., etc. So these are something that we are trying to investigate. We are trying to recognize. You are searching, examining those qualities, differences. So as you do it, as you progress, clear comprehension develops. So therefore, in order to develop clear comprehension, you have to have that curiosity. You have to do a little bit of investigation, and that leads to the development of sampajanya.
Second part of that question is, when trying not to think of anything, The mind finds it easier to wander away to mundane things. If contemplating on Tilakshana and the Dhamma, there's less chance of the mind wandering to mundane topics. But Bhante advises not to think of anything, but to keep watching the mind and think of nothing, which is harder. Your guidance is much appreciated, with metta and gratitude for your clarification. That's the end.
Yeah, I mean, basically the logic here is, so if the mind is completely pure, if the mind is completely satisfied, it is completely free from defilements, mind doesn't have to go anywhere. But why our mind is still going out? Why it is still going to the past? Why it is still going to here and there? So that indicates some sort of a defilements are still available, what you call as the fetters are still available. They are now in operation. So what we are trying to do is, once we have the clarity of mind, it simply loosens our grip and we allow the mind to, behave in a, as it wish. And then it suppose it's going to the past. And now we can recognize, okay, mind has gone to the past and now it's trying to enjoy certain, say, sensual pleasure. And now you recognize honestly, okay, the lust is available, the greed is available, and it is gross. And once you recognize it, again, you let it go and come back to the middle. Again, mind is pure. Again, mind is free. Again, you don't think, purposely you are not thinking anything, but you are keeping the mind in a very sort of a comfortable manner. Not in a way too tight, but rather allowing it to move as it like, because now you are confident that you have enough mindfulness. You have the clarity of mind. You can handle it. So that confidence is within you. So therefore you allow the mind to behave as it likes. And now suppose mind is going to the future and get into some uncertainty. So you get some fear, uncertainty and all these things. And now you recognize that as a new state, that as a defilement. And again now you let it go and again sort of cleanse the mind. Again you keep it very pure. So this is the kind of practice that we need to continually do, where once the mind is pure, once the mind is clean, you keep it there and not doing anything, but allowing the mind to play as it likes. Because you have the strength of mindfulness, power of mindfulness to observe it, to handle it, to save the mind if it is getting to a defilement, so you can clearly see it, then you can remove the defilements. If you can, there is a beautiful sutta called Sabbasava Sutta. There Buddha very clearly mentioned, only by seeing defilements you can purify, not otherwise. So, if we want to really cleanse our mind, really purify our mind, so then and there we need to recognize the arising of defilements, and then mindfully we can remove it or to let it go and again come back to the pure level of mind. Yeah.
So that's the last question for today, so I'll wrap up. So we actually had some really good questions. A lot of them were like practical, like walking, sitting, day-to-day activities, which is really good. Another thing was like there were some comments there where it looks like people have started this program, and you can see the experiences and their progression with the help of this program, which is really good. So with that, I'd like to thank Bhante and pass merits on to Bhante for helping us in this program, and also to the organizers and all those seen and unseen, and of course to most of all to the participants, because without you this program would not happen. So with that, I'd like to end the program. Teruvan Sarnai.
Teruvan Sarnai. Sukhi Hotu. Sadhu Sadhu.